Hey friends, the second installment of YouTube Benefit or Burden with my esteemed panel is here right now. And if you loved the first episode, and all indications are that you did, it was Remarkable Results Radio 464, then you'll love this one. Welcome to episode 492.
That 5 minutes is 25 years of experience that allowed you to do the job in 5 minutes. As an industry, we need to stop apologizing for it. I'm tired of hearing it. It's ridiculous.
Oh, I agree. Once you mention time, you give them a familiar denominator.
Right. Yep.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hi, friends. Carm Capriotto, the Aftermarket Podcast Guy here, and welcome to another audio gem, YouTube Benefit or Burden panel discussion, part two. Hey, Apex 2019 is in the record books, and I must say that Apex lived up to presenting leading-edge technology from suppliers, but also they did a great job of showcasing the emerging technology of tomorrow. It was unbelievable. You've got plenty of time now to plan for 2020 and be part of the new section called Repair Shop HQ. Yes, Apex, November 3rd through the 5th, 2020. Now more than ever. Please don't forget about Remarkable Results Radio's sister podcasts, The Town Hall Academy and the For the Record Show. Now, each show in the podcast network portfolio provides its own unique approach to aftermarket topics and trends. Please give each of them your due, something to learn in a big way from each. Hey, by the way, find the key talking points on this YouTube discussion at remarkableresults.biz/E492. Okay, as you go through this episode, you'll discover the stimulus for this discussion. There are many passionate people on both sides of the value of YouTube as it relates to auto repair. My panel, Paul Danner, Scanner Danner fame, Bryn Klein, shop owner and member of Trained by Techs, shop owner and technician Michael Broccolo, Rochester, New York, Sarah Frazier from Haas Performance Consulting, and Matt Fonslow, shop manager and lead diagnostician, Riverside Automotive, they're all here. You'll hear some sparks fly as the passion for training and quality diagnosis was front and center. The debate over the words diagnostic versus testing was prominent, and the real facts that many shops are not really diagnosing, but they're retrieving a fault code and using statistical diagnosis to find a repair option, therefore shooting the parts cannon, and in many cases not doing right by the customer. Now, as you've come to expect from the Aftermarket's premier podcast, this panel discussion is another reason why you've come to be a loyal, loving listener and embrace podcasts as one of your best learning tools. Hey, a warm welcome to my YouTube panel. Oh, if you had not listened to episode 464, the YouTube Benefit or Burden episode, I'm telling you, you owe it to yourself to do that. Here's the gang who was on, but we have one additional person on with us today, and I'll introduce her in a moment. Bryn Klein's with us from Assured Auto Works in Melbourne, Florida. Matt Fonslow, shop manager, diagnostician, Riverside Automotive, Red Wing, Minnesota. Paul Danner, Scanner Danner, educator, diagnostician, and YouTuber. And Michael Broccolo, owner with his dad in Broccolo Automotive and Collision. And Skills USA, first place winner for New York State. And with us brand new today is Sarah Frazier, a millennial social media expert, been on the podcast speaking to generations as we relate to millennials, Gen Z, and how it all kind of fits in how we do marketing to them. And she's also from Haas Performance Consulting. So, gang, good to have you here. And we're doing part two. So, Bryn, I think you helped bring this thing together this time.
Well, Matt had kind of a concept or thought that he wanted to touch on. And
it was pretty left field. I wanted Bryn to be honest.
I can do that this time.
Oh, wait a minute. So let me stop and remind everyone that if you listen to 464, how many times did he say that?
It was like two. All right, let's not blow it out of proportion. So let's just to be honest with you, I think Matt had a point that he wanted to bring to the table here today, but I thought it would be cool to bring Sarah on board because, you know, Bill and Sarah both have done so much generational work, and I think when we're talking about YouTube benefit or burden 2.0, I think, you know, a large percentage of the folks that are really referencing YouTube or, you know, millennials and Generation Z. So I thought, and the other thing is, correct me if I'm wrong, Sarah, but I feel like you are a little bit separated from the industry. Like, so you haven't, you know, worked a lot within the industry, correct?
Yeah, I was an office manager at a used car dealership and service center, but I mean, it was pretty disconnected from the actual service writing, that side of things. I've been around it my whole life, but yeah, I have a lot more of the customer perspective side of it.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. Kind of bringing your research that you've done with millennials and Gen Z. You're also doing a lot of social media for auto service businesses, but also the customer side of it, which I think, you know, most of us probably feel like we know what customers think and want, but I think that we are a little naive on that front. So I thought you would be a pretty good fit.
So as YouTube fits into the knowledge base of our customer standing in front of us or doing research on the job that we're quoting or the job that we just did, a little bit of what we discussed the last time was we found other industries don't trash each other, and it seems that a little bit of that goes on, though maybe a little bit, a lot of it goes on inside our industry. So, Sarah, I guess the question to you is, if I'm a millennial and I'm standing across from Bryn Klein getting something done, am I absolutely on my smart device on YouTube trying to find out if Bryn's telling me straight up?
I don't think every millennial does that, but I do think we are seeing it. And I think especially as we go into the younger generation, more so in Generation Z, that they want all that information. And so they might be more inclined to verify. I think as a millennial, we're more, before we even get to the shop, we're looking you up and we're looking at your reviews and what other people are saying about you and what's on your social media.
Michael's shaking his head, Mike.
I see that a lot. You know, where I am in Rochester, I'm sure you know, Carm, I have U of R, University of Rochester, Rochester Institute of Technology, and Monroe Community College. They're all within a half mile of me. So I'm seeing a lot of, you know, college students, and there are, a lot of them are from out of state too. Mm-hmm. So I'm dealing with a lot of, you know, kids that age, college aged. But I'm dealing with them personally, but I'm dealing with their parents over the phone. So it's like kind of a different dynamic sometimes because trying to explain over the phone to a parent, you know, about a repair. And I have a, you know, a student in front of me that he's already, you know, a lot of times they've already looked it up on YouTube and they've already figured it out most times, even though they're not paying for it, you know? So that's kind of tough sometimes, to do, you know, especially when they don't live there. So they don't trust you as it is for the most part, you know?
Yeah, we kind of have that stacked against us right out of the gate anyways, yeah. Regardless of the generation, I think, which is, you know, partially our doing for sure. You know, Carm just touched on it. I mean, you know, unfortunately, we have a long way to go. And so it's easy to kind of pick on ourselves. But like I was saying in the last episode, I think we don't think about things. You know, we don't think about the damage that we do. I don't know. Even myself, early on, 10 years ago when we opened up here, I wouldn't say we bashed other people or other shops, but, you know, we would talk about what the difference, you know, what would go on at shop A versus what would happen here. And, you know, you can still do that, but I think you have to be careful when you do that.
You were trying to put your company in the right light, but if you didn't have really good experience, it ended up putting the other company in bad light.
Yeah, it wasn't intentional. I think the more we learn, the more careful we can or need to be and will be when we try to market ourselves and set ourselves apart from the competition. But you know, speaking of YouTube, I think Matt, you were saying you had a specific example that you thought would be potentially a problem.
Well, it's more of a scenario,
yeah,
where the clients have done their research on perhaps your place of business or you as a technician, but they've probably done some research on the vehicle issue itself, whether symptom or they went and rented or had a parts store borrow them a scan tool or the they got the free code scan, and they started doing some research, and they kind of have an idea what could be wrong with the vehicle, but they don't have the means or the time or whatnot to do the repair. You got really good reviews, or they've selected your shop for whatever reason, word of mouth, doesn't matter. It ends up in your shop, and now you've either quoted the work or now it's time to pay the bill, and they're upset because why should I pay for this diagnosis? Because I saw this YouTube video, I saw this internet search that came up with this was the problem. Why am I paying for this diagnosis? Or, hey, I watched this video, it took them 15 minutes to do this job, and you're charging me, you know, one unit, 1 hour, whatever this fee, this is outrageous.
Yeah.
What interests me with Sarah's perspective is I feel like this is an opportunity to take a negative and turn it into a positive at the front counter by maybe twisting. Twisting is actually sounds more nefarious than what I mean. Maybe re-educate them on exactly what are you paying for versus what you've found on an internet search.
I think absolutely. It's such a great place to start showing that value. From the customer's perspective, you know, when you say we're going to do diagnostic, that doesn't mean anything to me. I don't know what that word means. I don't know what you're doing. You know, so I think creating that value of what it is we're actually doing, you know, when I go to the doctor, let's say I know I have an ear infection. I know I need a prescription. I've been through this before, but I know that the doctor has to see me before they're going to write that prescription. And I kind of feel that with cars too. You know, we need to see the car. And I think that's a great place to start creating that value too, is just explaining how much we're doing in that original diagnostic.
That's a good point. You're not getting a prescription without being seen. So that's interesting. I mean, that's definitely a decent talking point when you're dealing with a client. But going back to Matt, I think, and Sarah, you backed it up with the word diagnostic. I mean, this is a concept that's been around for probably 20 years. One of the first persons that I remember hearing it from was George Witt. Years and years ago, talking about the D word and how we need to keep that out of our vocabulary and how we need to sell testing. And most of the marketing gurus or business gurus and coaches will teach you to sell testing because that's what you're doing. You're not selling a solution. You're selling a series of tests that are needed to pinpoint and verify the concern.
Yeah, if we're going to use the word, at least use it properly. We misuse it.
Paul, are you all over the word testing versus diagnostics?
As far as using the word diagnosis, I live in a weird world now, so I don't know that my opinion is valuable there, because I really only work for my brother and I pick up the camera and, you know, I'm in a classroom. So I'm not really selling myself as I was in the past to all the different garages, but I would call it a diagnostic. I never really got hung up on the word. I think the important part for the industry is that we stop calling it a time, because you hear that. I hear that so much, where a customer might get angry because you only spent 5 minutes and you're still going to charge them $150. Well, stop calling it a time. It's not an hour diagnostic. It's a initial flat fee. This is what you agreed to pay me before we brought your car in. And I make that clear. And I would do that with my garages too. Like, I don't care. I would tell them with a new garage, I don't care if it takes me 5 minutes or 60 minutes. It's the same fee. Do you agree to that or not? If they say yes, as soon as I hook my scan tool up to that car, you're getting charged. And I don't make no apologies for it. And I think we need to stop doing that. And I think we need to stop calling it a diagnostic time. The initial one, of course, you know, we're going to have, you know, cars that go beyond that hour, right? And so you make that clear to your customer. Here's the flat fee that you are going to pay me to look at your car. I don't care what internet search you've done. I don't care what, you know, if you want me to look at it, then clearly you've been here, there, and everywhere. And this is my fee, and I make no apologies for it. And I think that's what we need to do. Here's the problem, though. Our industry as a whole, probably 90%, that might even be a generous number, simply connect a scan tool and read a code and change a part. They're doing nothing more than what the part store is doing. And so that's why the customers are getting mad, because they know that's all that garage has done. And, you know, sure, there are times where you can do that. I just looked at my neighbor's Volkswagen that has a number 3 cylinder misfire. I'm hanging my Christmas lights. I don't feel like looking at the damn car. I said, number three cylinder misfire, put the coil in it. Guess what? Coil fixed it just because I've been there. So you have those jobs and people see that, then they think that's a diagnosis. So we have that part of it too. But you know what? If they come to you after they've already been part swapping and been on YouTube and been on, you know, at the parts store, trust me, it's needed. And I think we just need to stop apologizing for the fact that it only took you 5 minutes. That 5 minutes is 25 years of experience that allowed you to do the job in 5 minutes. As an industry, we need to stop apologizing for it. I'm tired of hearing it. It's ridiculous.
Oh, I agree.
Once you mention time, you give them a familiar denominator.
Right. Yep. It's not time. It's not a diagnostic time. It is a diagnostic service, or it's an analysis, if you want to call it, if we want to pick on a word, that this is what I'm going to offer you for up to 60 minutes. Up to 60 minutes. And then you know what, Mr. or Mrs. Customer, after that 60 minutes, we can talk about where we're going next. You guys know, Bryn, Michael, Matt, you guys know we've been doing this long enough that probably 90% of the cars that we look at, we can do in that first hour.
Right.
You know, maybe that's a little high, 85%, whatever. We have those few that beat you up, but we can handle it.
We certainly have a pretty good idea. And like you said, at that 60-minute mark, if we don't have a solution, we know what to talk to them about. Absolutely. This is the test that we've done. This is what we know. This is where the next test we need to run to be sure what we've got going on.
We have a direction.
Right. I think you were alluding to basically is that, unfortunately, I said a moment ago that we have a long way to go. So we do pick on ourselves because there's a lot of work to be done here. But one of them is the fact that it's an interesting conversation, diagnostics and selling diagnostics, because so many shops are not diagnosing. They're retrieving a fault code. They're using their own experience or a database of experience. You know, and looking at,
you got some big companies playing on that,
right? Statistical diagnostic is what diagnostics is what I call it, which Matt, you alluded to a moment ago. We're using the word incorrectly. And I would assume you mean that we're not diagnosing it, but we're calling it diagnostics because we're doing statistical diagnostics. Here's the thing. I mean, the solution is training, which comes back to, you know, several different avenues. You have traditional classroom based, you have hands-on stuff. You have online stuff, whether it be behind a firewall like AVI, but you also have YouTube, right? You have not all diagnostic or even repair videos on YouTube is training, but there certainly is some training on YouTube. Would you guys agree?
Yeah.
So we have to learn how to diagnose. But how do you sell diagnostics if you're not you're not actually diagnosing cars?
People do it. It's ridiculous. And then that's what gives us a bad name as a whole is these garages that, you know, the car's not cranking. So they put a battery in it and then they put a starter in it and it's still not cranking. And then they put an alternator in it and you got a bad block ground. You know, I mean, that's a simple check for the guy that knows how to troubleshoot. And unfortunately, in that scenario, you take it to 10 different garages in my area, I bet you maybe one of them catches that. One, bad block ground. It doesn't need a starter. It doesn't need a battery. You got a bad block ground. Simple check.
There's a lot. You know, Sarah, you mentioned a moment ago, you have to go see the doctor before a prescription is being written. I think there are a lot of parallels to our industry, in my opinion, than there is medical. And I've heard Matt's on this, you know, on Remarkable Results say in the past, he doesn't like to draw those parallels, but they are, they're there. So, I mean, when you go see a doctor, you have a flat fee, like Paul was just mentioning, you have a flat fee to see him. I guess if you have, you know, insurance, you have your copay, but then if they have to run tests to pinpoint what's going on with it, you have those tests on top of that flat fee, which is kind of what we were just alluding to, you know. Matt, I know that you at least had to play service advisor. I think you shared a story about that recently, but I'm guessing you certainly have interactions with clients fairly regularly. And Mike, you do as well. I was thinking that since if we can use Sarah here for a customer's perspective, if we can kind of get a feel for, you know, different scenarios and what she thinks sits better for her when as approaching selling diagnostic or selling testing to a client. Like, what does your shop do, Matt? When a customer calls and says, "This is the symptom I have," I have a check engine light, I've had this parts store read the code. How do you guys handle that?
We have a flat fee. They're paying for testing. They're not paying for a result. The result is what I get to through testing. And I might get it, you know, in that first shot. I might be able to come back and say, look, I need X amount of more dollars to be able to follow this path. This is the way I'm going. But we make it very, very apparent or communicate to them they're not paying for a result. They're paying for testing. What I arrive at is because of the testing.
How do you handle those calls, Mike?
Same way. Test like a flat diagnostic fee, like Paul was talking about, like Matt was talking about. These days, you know, you start, I'm not going to say what I charge because it's probably doesn't matter, but I usually start with, you know, basically I can give it an honest effort, an hour's worth of effort. And if I know it's coming in the next day, you know, I'm doing my homework the night before anyways. So that's where it's kind of tough. I've been roped into some diagnostic jobs, and I usually like to have my dad sell the diagnostic fee up front because I find that I want to get to an answer so badly that I will waste a lot of my own time, even if it wasn't, you know, confirmed by the customer. So that's where I need to be better, you know, because I do give away my time.
The Apex 19 is in the record books and brought the best and brightest together to create an experience like no other. Now, I was so impressed with the impact Apex has in presenting emerging technology. They are on the cutting edge of the connected car, and you'll find everything you need to know on what you'll need to do to stay ahead of the curve. Regarding emerging technology, Apex will feature again in 2020 the latest trends that will have an impact on the service professional and equipment. Wow, see, feel, and touch the latest tools and equipment that will bring efficiencies to your business. And in 2020, there's going to be a separate section dedicated to the service professional shop. It'll be called Repair Shop Headquarters, and it's the place to be if you earn your living in the aftermarket. And for training, Apex will present some of the best aftermarket technician and management trainers in 2020. So mark your calendar right now. Put the date on it. Apex 2020, November 3rd through the 5th in Las Vegas. Listen right here to learn all about the exciting events and when you can start registering. I want to narrow in on Sarah's contribution here by trying to incite a little riot with you all. And Sarah, I'd love you to chime in on this. If I was coming to Matt's place for some work, I got a code, I spent some time on YouTube, I watched four or five videos, and now I'm walking into Matt's shop, Sarah, and I want you to think of the scenario here. I may be an expert. You know, did you ever hear of the words armchair quarterback? Okay. Does the younger generation who's investing their time in this research, do they feel that they're pretty good with what's going to happen?
I think they probably do because we tend to believe a lot of what we see and read. And, you know, if they've vested their time in doing the research, they probably feel like they are now that expert and they know exactly what's wrong with it. And I think that's the point of explaining, you know, why we're here as a mechanic and the training that we have and the experience that we have and, you know, explaining all the value that goes into that test that you're about to do. I mean, I think a lot of times too, we come in just asking for the price right away as a customer because we don't know what else to ask for.
That's true. So Matt, the person across from you, you're getting a sense and a feel because they've done the research that they know a little bit more than they're letting on.
Maybe, or they think they do, and I understand why. I don't necessarily mean that condescendingly, but I also try to reveal to them the flip side of that is if I just go by what you're saying, this by statistics, not even saying using a database, based on your research through forums or YouTube videos of how to go about this repair or what is most likely the cause of this, what happens when I do the repair that you've hired me to do and it doesn't fix the car?
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's, we say the same thing. Like that may be a risk you're willing to take, but we're not.
Right. And so I try, and I'm not saying I'm good at it, I try to make it a positive that my testing ended up proving that what you found was correct, rather than devaluing all the work I did to prove that this component has failed or this service is required. Trying to use it as a way to, this should instill even more confidence in me and in this repair, that I am being honest. This, here's the results of my testing. This is why I feel this is correct. And then it's a great, great day when, hey, I want you to do this job. No, I would rather diagnose it. And my diagnosis disproves your idea that you found on an internet search or a video.
That is wonderful. We always pray for that to happen. It's always awkward whenever our results of our testing match what they what they anticipated through their research. But Sarah, would you say that it probably has everything to do with how it is communicated?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's definitely, and I think as much transparency as you can offer, the better. You know, especially looking at 24-year-olds and younger, that Generation Z, they want all of those details. They want that honesty. They want that transparency.
Yeah. So that's kind of, so when we get a call from a client and we usually tell them that we'll do an assessment at no charge, because we really don't have any idea of what we're up against until we've at least seen what fault codes is in what modules, felt the concern or heard the concern ourselves. So we'll tell our clients that we'll do a quick assessment at no charge. If we see anything that's obvious during that assessment, then we'll give you an estimate right then and there for the repair. But if we don't see anything obvious during that assessment, that allows us to get a better understanding of what tests need to be done to pinpoint that concern confidently.
How much time are you willing to invest in the assessment, Bryn?
Well, I would say minutes. And you have to train yourself, Mike, like Mike alluded to just a moment ago. I'm the same way. Once I start on something, like, I want to see it through. I don't want to get pulled off. So it's definitely, there's a pain point there for a while. I think
your pain point. Not the customers.
Not the customers. It's my pain point. But let's say there are scenarios where we get a car and during my assessment, I just keep at it and my service advisor will contact the client. Hopefully I've done my due diligence and put, screenshots of the fault codes and maybe annotated them and put, quick brief notes on what we need to do. So, because we're obviously going to need to build value in that and what we're selling there, because diagnostics and testing is just another part of the
sales. I just discovered a great way for you to make more money.
Okay.
We should all say it at once. Charge for the assessment.
Yeah.
What do you think, Mike? You guys do that?
Yeah. I mean, especially right now with all the, with all the snow we just got last week, it was like, when we're really busy, if you want to get your car in, you got to agree to the assessment fee. And we try to do that all the time.
But he was doing it for no charge. And you're saying, he wants to jump in and figure out what it is in a few minutes. And then he ends up he's got a half hour into it and he's not getting paid.
Yeah. Like I said, there's a learning curve, but after you train yourself, but after a while you really do end up spending a few moments looking at it. But here's the thing, and this is my opinion, and I'm not going to take credit for this. A lot of this is, we've hired and worked with Jeremy O'Neill with past service advisors. But the benefit of this is, in the event that you do need more time than that hour, it's way easier up front to ask for that, to prepare them for that, than it is to stop your technician at an hour and contact that client. Listen, this is, I mean, not that it's the end of the world, but it's just, it makes for a better scenario. Like, that's what we found anyways.
But nowhere on YouTube does it teach the consumer what to expect in that regard from a shop. And they're just getting experts' opinions and saying, if you're being overcharged or being assessed, or run quickly the other way. I mean, that was the real power that came from episode 464 that we did together.
It's probably a good reason as a business to start shooting some videos, be it for YouTube or Facebook video, something of that nature. That's not so much a how-to, but more this is how we do things. And maybe use a scenario with a diagnosis, not necessarily showing the actual process, but hinting at it here and there, how this benefits you. This saves you a lot of money over time.
Yeah, so I've done a couple. One, I think, was diagnostics, and the other was oil and filter services. I don't know. I think one of them is done, Sarah. Sarah's, I don't know if I've sent you that one or not, but
I think you did, yeah.
I think that is the answer, Matt. I think that as shops, I think it's our job. I mean, we've always said it's our job to educate our customers, but it's hard sometimes. I mean, you have to have a really killer sales team to really do that. But if you do like a four or five minute video, I don't know. The trick is finding a way to get it in front of potential clients, which, you know, is usually through social media. But
I think, I don't know that websites necessarily get that kind of action anymore. The website, they're going to find it more on your Facebook page or a YouTube channel.
Yep, your Instagram.
Sarah, work with me on this one. Any shop that's really looking to make a mark in their community and they're using social media, they're going to have a Facebook page and they're going to have organic content. And I had just, you know, I have a problem, everyone. I don't know if I've ever shared this with you, but ideas just keep coming. And so I wrote this down as I was listening to you. Befriend your client ecosystem. And create five rules, five customer rules. They're not really rules as much as they're the commitments that we want to make. And say commitment number one is that we are going to spend, you know, time on testing and come up with these little 30-second vignettes on how it is that you do what you do in your business from, you know, the sign in, the sign out, the loaner card, whatever it is that you do, and start building that assurance, right, Bryn, that you were working on, that was so when they come in, they've already been, you know, massaged, if you will.
Maybe you have those, and the very first moment you are in contact with them, you're setting that appointment, you say, hey, is it okay if I send you an email? And she's going to send you a 30-second video on what to expect when you arrive and what, you know, specifics, you know, like you were saying, specifics to whatever it is that you're planning on doing with that client.
It may, rule number four is if you bring a car in with a really, you know, a problem, intermittent problem, where we have to, you know, get inside and scan for codes and do some testing, we have some, you know, minimum fees so that we can save you money in the long run. I mean, those are really cool words to say, and they may not be the right ones, but to build inside this video ecosystem of yours that could play on your own YouTube channel, can play on Facebook, and you soften up the customer. You basically are teaching them the culture of how we're going to do business.
Yeah, you're pulling back the curtain a little bit and you're doing a preemptive, I hate to say strike, it's not really a strike, maybe a shield, really. Preemptive softening that, you know, the basis of this series is the repercussions of YouTube type videos devaluing what we do. If they come in with preconceived notions of not knowing exactly what's going on, they're seeing these little short 5-minute videos of plug the scan tool in, it's most likely this is how we fixed it, and they're thinking it's kind of like that at the shop. Now you can record this, you know, 5 to 10 minute video that's a little more detailed on this process, and also show, and we keep coming back to diagnostics, but the scan tool produces a code, you know, pulls a code from a vehicle. It doesn't tell me what part to replace. There isn't a part number attached to this. This is a beginning of a path to find the root cause. And this is how we kind of do that. And it doesn't have to be super detailed, but it can kind of give them an idea when they're dropping their vehicle off that there's a process this car goes through before it's, you know, quote unquote diagnosed and then repaired and your keys are given back to you. I think it could be a very good educational service, as well as that softening blow that you're kind of shielding yourself from these preconceived notions developed from YouTube video is not necessarily aimed at customers on how a shop works, how it really works, more or less techs educating themselves, techs educating other techs, or, I mean, let's be honest, trying to go for their 5 minutes of fame.
How professional does it have to be?
I don't think it has to be professional at all. And I'm very long-winded by nature when it comes to this stuff, but I was just going to ask you guys, but especially Sarah, since you're doing so much marketing, social media marketing, you know, it's all about, I mean, you got to consider your audience. That's the first step, but then you have to consider how you're going to get it in front of them, right? They're not going to watch. I mean, my stuff is six, seven minutes long. They're not going to generally watch that. So can we do that? Because I feel like that's how much time is needed to really give, you know, do what Matt was just saying, but can we do that and then find like a way to make a 20-30 second commercial for that to push out on social media and say, here's the link to the video.
I think that's a great idea. Like a little teaser, especially again, when you're talking about younger generations, the attention span is so short, but you know, giving that little bit, that 20-30 seconds that now I'm like, oh, I want to see the rest of this. You know, and as relatable as you can be, as personable as you can be, you know, so when you ask professional, I think, you know, the more you come across as a real person, the better. I want to know as much as I can know about a place, any place that I'm going to do business with before I go there. I'm always looking, you know, if it's somewhere I have to wait, what does a waiting room look like? Or if I'm going to go get my hair done, I want to see the picture of the stylist I'm going to go see, or the massage therapist I'm going to go see, you know, all that information, the more the better.
I'm curious, like, Paul, your videos are extremely high quality. Audio is extremely good quality. So you have a fair amount of money invested in equipment. But for something like this, not aimed at being a YouTube series of educating other techs, or, you know, like a pay-for type thing as an advertisement, can you get away with a cell phone or...
I think so. The way cell phones are today, for sure. No problem. Yep. And you can honestly get a point and shoot camera camcorder for under $400 that will do the job that you need to do what you guys are talking about. And I'd like to add to say that I don't think we necessarily need to be concerned. Brent, you mentioned 30 seconds, 7 minutes. As people, are we going to have their attention span? If you got to think about it like this. Is my videos average 40 minutes. And since I've been filming at my brother's garage, he is getting people from all over the place that are coming in. And so they're, you know, they may not have the attention span to watch.
Did you want to film at my garage?
we could do that. I'll help you guys out for sure. That'd be cool. But like, here's the thing. People, it goes back to what I said earlier. We have in this field such a serious lack of actual diagnostic technicians or guys that can troubleshoot, that people now are using social media, they're using YouTube to find people to fix their car. Most of my DIYers that follow me have already been to 3-4 different garages. Mm. And they haven't diagnosed it properly. And so now they're doing it themselves. And so they get to the point now where they're like, oh, well, this guy knows what he's talking about. I can see it. And so, I'm going to go to his brother's shop. We have guys that are taking and renting hotel rooms and dropping their car off to my brother. And we're not promising them anything. We're like, listen, you can stay down the road if you want, but we're not promising you anything. If you want to bring it, we'll take a shot at it. But that's what I'm seeing happen. And I believe that the social media, what you guys are talking about, is a great idea. I think you guys should be on that tomorrow. Filming stuff that you do in your shop, and you don't have to give it away, like you said, Matt. You can show some real, tangible results of hey, you know, look at this. For example, I mentioned a bad block ground that, you know, car doesn't crank, and you don't have to go through all the steps of, here, look at what we found, and here's the quick test to do it. We don't have to say quick test because we're talking about justifying, you know, a diagnostic fee. But absolutely, I think that you guys need to do this ASAP. Because I am seeing it on the front lines, and I'm seeing customers come in from all over the place to my brother's shop just because of what I'm doing.
I want to put a pin in that right now and remind everyone that Brent Klein from Assured Auto Works is with us, Matt Fonslow, Paul Danner, Scanner Danner, Micah Bercolo, and Sarah Frazier. you just said something so big, so huge, so profound that we have this huge lack of diagnosticians in our industry. Now, let's think about the tech shortage and let's just put way off to the left that whole concept that we have a technician shortage. We have a diagnostician shortage. Interesting. Well, think about the people we have in the industry who haven't stepped up or haven't gone for the training and haven't made that deep commitment to want to, you know, to really want to get their PicoScope out and their DVOM and jump at it. Can we just spend a few minutes on that, Matt?
For one thing, a couple things. One is to respond to what Paul was saying. I have never been so scared to look at a car as the first one that got towed in from states away and they got stayed in a hotel.
Tell me about it.
I was scared to death.
It sucks.
A lot of pressure.
Like, you know, I'm not feeling so good. Maybe not going to make it in today. The second thing is, I think it's been beaten to death, but I guess it really just needs to be continued to be beaten to death, is most of our systems, our compensation systems, our shop cultures are not such that they reward diagnosticians or diagnostic processes or analytic thinking.
The shop needs one. I'm willing to step up. Even though the pay isn't what it is, I believe I can earn myself up there if I decide to commit and educate and go be trained and join the clubs and become, you know, work with Bryn and his team, trained by techs.
Well, a lot of us are created from our egos. And Paul had one of the greatest rants ever recorded about that, just stepping up and being that guy, and you don't have to be this
fire rate machine.
Yeah, and you don't necessarily need to be
huge.
I think
producer.
You're speaking more about franchises, but you don't have to be like the guy.
That's the culture, though. It's not just franchises. It's independent shops. It's dealership it's all of them. The culture is you're a rock star if you can produce. You're not a risk rock star if you can diagnose. Unfortunately, amongst our peers, we are. We all, you know. Hold each other in high regard for our diagnostic ability. But overall, industry-wide, I think the culture is you're a rock star if you're a flat rate producer, right?
And I think that was Paul's rant, was that...
Which rant was that? Which one?
You were talking about working for a franchise shop. And it might have been the last episode on YouTube. And the franchise itself, mothership, may not look at you as being all that great. But within the shop or the... franchises in that immediate area, you're the guy. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the reward is they look up to you as the guy, but it may not be so much reflected in your paycheck or from corporate.
I didn't experience that though. And even from I never made the Top Gun list that was in the bathroom, you know, that you looked at when you were taking a dump on the toilet anyway. That's about what it was worth to me. But, you know, even when it came time for a raise, you know, the local guys, you know, my store manager, my service manager, you know, I was the guy getting a dollar an hour raise, not the 25 cents. So even though I wasn't recognized like, you know, corporate level, even the district manager knew like, this is the guy, we need to pay this guy. And so I don't know. I'm just surprised to hear sometimes, not from you guys, but just in general, the widespread notion that it's difficult to make money being a diagnostic guy, because that was always my path.
Maybe it's more the in-between, because there's a pretty big learning curve to being a diag guy. So sure. Like when you are really good at diagnosing vehicles, then you do get the respect from your colleagues and maybe middle management. But there's a big learning curve. So all those years that you spend, and maybe you spend a little more time, and it does take you, even if you are a rock star diagnostic-wise, you're still taking more time than if you were to just shoot, you know, pull the trigger based off somebody else's experiences, right? So yeah. I don't know.
I think to speak to that, Bryn, I think the key is we all live in a society now, and Sarah can attest to this, especially with the younger generation. It's like instant gratification. We live in this time where that's what we want. And I think people aren't looking at the big picture. And you're right, Bryn, is when I started, I was kind of making peanuts for a while, for like the first 3 years. But I knew that if I spent the extra 5 to 10 minutes on that job, granted I was paid hourly, so it was okay.
Even in a flat rate situation, I think you should do that. You should have a bigger picture look, because if you do that and then you understand why you made the mistake that you did, so you don't repeat it, you'll make money off of that mistake for the next 20 years. And yeah, people don't see that. And so I think the mistakes are important. You have to have the a shop environment that allows you to make those mistakes, you know?
Yeah,
you know,
I agree.
So I don't know.
The culture can change, but I think it takes all kinds of different directions. But maybe we just, you know, good quality shops are steering the ship by producing these quick videos, basically educating our clients. Like, this is not even like the videos that I do. I usually at the end, I hope this is helpful for you. You know, if you find yourself with a noise or vibration or a check engine light illuminated or any kind of warning light illuminated, this is, you know, hopefully this arms you with enough information to find a good shop if it's not us. So I think it's us in producing these quick little videos to kind of give them an idea of what really should happen. Mm-hmm. And maybe, you know, we're doing what we're doing, but also over time, customers will start demanding, listen, I don't really want you to, I'm not a gambler, you know, I don't appreciate Vegas. I don't really want you to gamble with my car. Do you have a team there that can actually diagnose this?
Yeah. You know, as you're talking, Bryn, I want to say something to all you guys, that if you guys put something together, I know each of you, I would absolutely help and share that in a way, because I have people ask me all the time, hey, you got anybody that follows you that, you know, lives in Arizona? You got anybody that follows you that lives in Florida? And so I'll reach out on my own social media platform and try to find someone that's available. We just did this for someone in Tasmania. And I found a mobile diagnostic guy. I found a mobile diagnostic guy to go to this woman's house. This poor woman was every video I would upload, she's asking me questions about how to test the relay. And she has awesome. A speech thing too. So I couldn't really understand her well. And it was one that I was like, you know what? We need to make something happen for her. And we got a we got a mobile guy to go out. Unfortunately, we couldn't fix it. It ended up being an immobilizer issue. And it was like $1,000 BCM on a 98, something that wasn't worth it. You know, and the car was butchered. And so the ending wasn't great, but the point was using this platform that we have, this social media, the YouTube, the Facebook, can be a good thing if we do it right. You know, if we stay together, we follow what Matt had said in the previous one, which is our, what's the wrestler's name?
Ric Flair.
Ric Flair. Let's Ric Flair each other. Build each other up, because you guys aren't my competition. You're a product of what I want to see. You're something that my students can look at and say, hey, I can be that guy too, you know? And so, I don't know. I mean, I certainly would do that. I do have my moments where I rip on this industry because it's so bad in so many circumstances, but I'm not really an individual garage, you know? I'm not like ripping on that garage. Just in general, these freaking parts changers, it makes me sick. And so anyway, I'm just saying I would do that. You guys set up a video, and then I know where I don't even know exactly where you guys are. But I have people ask me all the time where they can take their car, and I would be able to direct people in that direction. And if you had something on social media, then I can send them a link. Say, here's my friend Matt, and here's what he does. Here's my friend Bryn. Here's my friend Mike. Here's what they do. And here's a link, and go check them out. They, you know, I have them, I hold them in confidence, and I know you can go there and get your car taken care of. So
I asked to put a pin in that whole social media thing in the videos, and I really want to go back to it. I want to try to wrap it up and talk about, if we do these videos, Sarah, where's the best place for them? Should we have a YouTube channel that we could link Facebook to so that they're always there? Because will they disappear in Facebook? Give us some guidance.
Yeah, you absolutely would want to put it on a YouTube channel. You could put it as a post on your Facebook and pin it so it stays at the top of your page. You can run it as a story on your Instagram. And then after that, because your Instagram story goes away after 24 hours, But after that 24 hours, you have the option to go in and turn that story into a highlight so that anytime somebody goes to your Instagram profile, they can look at your highlights. That would be an absolutely fantastic place to put that. I do want to go back and touch on what Paul was saying about, you know, building each other up on social media. I think the customer perspective, for me, that's fantastic. I would much rather give my business to a shop that has something good to say about other shops than to a shop that's, you know, saying negative things about other shops or we do this better than that person. That puts a bad taste in my mouth. And I think that in marketing, we really do need to stay away from that. And so to go out and build each other up and say good things about what other people in the industry are doing, I think is amazing. And doing that on social media is such a good place to do that.
Something I want to add for you guys that are maybe considering doing this too. And this is kind of my world. So I can see the traffic difference. One of the things I've learned about Facebook is Facebook really doesn't want you to leave their platform, and really neither does YouTube. And so when you do a YouTube video and you post the link on Facebook to your YouTube video, it does not get the same traction as if you were to put that video on Facebook itself. So just keep that in mind as you go. You may want to put the same video uploaded twice because you guys aren't doing it for ad revenue. You're not doing it for what I'm doing it for. You're doing it for your business. So it doesn't matter about the ads. You probably want to make sure the ads are turned off. You don't need ads on your business video that's going to show people, you know, come to my shop. But I would suggest that you put the same video on platforms and not share the links just because of traction. That's what I'm seeing anyway. And maybe Sarah can speak to that too.
That's a great point.
I definitely agree with that. I mean, if you are going to link to with Instagram, you can only put one link in your profile. So a tool that I've seen used a lot is there's a website called Linktree that allows you to create a page of links. So you can have that one link in your Instagram profile that they click on, which would take them to a page that would have your Facebook link, your website link, your YouTube channel link, all of those things. But I do think getting the actual video out there, having that saved as your highlight, resharing it multiple times, because not everything you share goes to all of your followers, you know, so it is okay to share things more than once, more than twice.
Just to follow up, did you, Sarah, just say that we need to Ric Flair each other more often?
Absolutely.
Hey, this was great. Awesome. I so enjoyed this. I feel that you guys had another hour in you. Will you come back?
Sure. Let's just do it now.
Absolutely. It's late, Matt. I have to go to bed.
I know, and the Penguins are playing, man. I'm missing my Penguins.
Yeah. Very good. Are they playing the Sabres tonight? Who knows?
I don't know.
Anyway, hey, thanks so much. Go back, listen to 464, the YouTube Benefit or Burden episode. I'm not sure what we're going to call this, but it was really enjoyable. I think you guys went to a lot of great places. Thanks to Bryn Klein again, Assured Auto Works in Melbourne, Florida, and Matt Fonslow, shop manager, diagnostician at Riverside Automotive in Red Wing, Minnesota, Paul Danner, educated diagnostician, and YouTuber Scanner Danner. Michael Bricolo is with us, owner with his dad in Bricolo Automotive, Rochester, right next door to me, Rochester, New York, and Sarah Frazier, millennial social media expert, been on the podcast. Just go to my website, type in Sarah Frazier, and immerse yourself in her great generational podcast. So, hey, thank you all. Appreciate it. We'll do round three soon.
Awesome.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.